Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, it is the Redmen Originals podcast. It is the 1st of February, new month, new positive outlook.
Speak for yourself.
I do one.
I'm joined alongside me, right next to me, is a man picking at a table. It's Mr. Chris Page.
Give me a hole on the side. It's going to be figured out.
Chloe Bloxham, Dan Club stepping in for the injured Steehaw.
He's out with a throat.
Okay, yeah, checking, yeah. Checking for double entendre.
VAR.
I think it's safe.
I think we're good. We're going to talk about the Reds, obviously, because that's what we do. As much as we'd all love to just... I mean, Chloe wants to start a channel where you just sing 2000s pop songs.
As we love the Reds. I wouldn't be singing them. I'd be nodding my head to them, yeah.
You were scared of copyright, even with you singing, weren't you? Which is interesting.
No, that was him. That wasn't me.
Chloe's got a really good voice.
Yeah, I mean, there's no copyright issues if I'm singing.
No, not me.
No. Unless they release a one-tone version of it. It's the monotone version of Neo's greatest hits. Like auto-tune if you tuned it all. If you tuned it all in reverse, yeah. So we're going to be doing the agony rants. It's getting earlier and earlier in the show, and I've just decided we're just going to put it up top. First part of the show is going to be dedicated to getting everything off our chests, and then we might look ahead to Wolves in the back end.
We might, if we've got time.
We have got a kickoff question. A lot of the suggestions that came in were fucking rubbish, so I took this upon myself. If you could travel in time, which of Liverpool's previous January signings would you bring to today to help Liverpool turn their season around? I'm going to ask Dan Club first.
Everyone wants to say Javier Mascherano, don't they?
So I'm Klopp wants to say a forward, though.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, bizarrely enough. Might have bought another left back beforehand.
Anyone that can play left wing?
It's just Javier Mascherano, isn't it? And he was a brilliant footballer. He didn't really live up to what he then went on to live up to after playing for Liverpool. Like, his Barcelona career was markedly better than what he was for us, but what a footballer. And even with us, he was superb.
And so with the Canate injury, he can play centre-back.
But that's it,
and
precisely.
People can stop suggesting Fabinho to play centre-back.
Yeah, which is
a lad who can't
himself.
Even play his best position right now.
I know. Yeah, it's just Mascherano. Class.
You talk about Mick Moran on Twitter there.
Talk about everybody who was on the shows when I was doing the live shows yesterday, Paul. Not just Mick Moran. Everybody was like, Fabinho can play centre-back. He can't even play midfield no more.
Yeah.
Do one.
Maybe it's an easier job. It must be, because otherwise, like, we'd have defo tried, like, no.
It's fine.
When he was
we
boss.
All know that Nat Phillips and Reece Williams are going to get a stop for.
Jesus
That's
Christ.
Just the way it is.
The back,
what happens
though,
on the down seasons.
They're the back, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to move the fifth centre halves into midfield. Matip, honestly, I would.
You're not the first person to suggest Matip going to the end.
I don't see why not. Obviously, right now, because let's be honest, you want him put in centre half. But come on, I'd love it. Just one game of seeing Matip as the end.
I have no interest in that.
No.
Honestly, no interest.
No interest in
at all.
It's been suggested before to me. I've got no interest.
I'm not
honestly.
Suggesting something boring here. Like, you mean, come on.
What we don't need is a DM that's going to go missing all game. We've tried that this season.
We've got enough issues.
Matip there is just the same.
We've got enough issues about trying mad shit. And that is mad. We've never seen that mad. And Fabinho was boss. When he was the best DM in the world, he was okay dropping back because he was full of confidence. Everything was sound. He can go back. He can do a job. He's now devoid of any confidence. You can't just say, oh, by the way, do you mind doing a job back there as well? No. Not happening.
Is anyone got an alternative suggestion to Javier Mascherano, or are we just thinking that he's...
I mean, there's an obvious one, but I mean, right now, due to our midfield, I'd rather Mascherano, but obviously Luis Suarez.
Yeah.
Please.
See, yeah, if we're gonna, if we're
does
gonna...
he come with Carol?
No,
like, he has to get
yeah, you've got to do the whole of that windows business.
So we got to sell Salah.
Would you rather? Okay,
$50 million
here's
to Chelsea.
A question.
Which they can spread over the next 17 years to get inside the FFP regulations.
Would you rather they had to come as a pair, signed Suarez and Carol, or Sturridge and Coutinho?
Ooh,
Suarez.
No, Sturridge and Coutinho.
I want Suarez.
Carol, I think, yeah.
Could I have Suarez for longer than 3-4 years?
I mean...
Or will he fuck us off again at some point?
I mean, it's within his... He might also bite someone and get banned forever. You know what I mean?
So it literally the carbon... So
and Sturridge, you get
again.
Like... Yeah, you're getting a repeat of their careers, effectively.
Okay. It's Suarez. Sturridge got
Sturridge
injured far too much.
By the way, because think about what you could do. You could rebuild the entirety of Liverpool again, and maybe you'd sell Sturridge a little bit earlier.
Let's not forget that he played basically the left wing for the first 2 years. Coutinho, we're stacked there.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, no, but he could be the number 10, Chris. Could be the number 10, like everyone said he could
maybe
be,
we'll
and no one saw any evidence.
Yeah.
Let us know if you're in the comments. What would you rather do if you
it's
had
Suarez.
To choose
Suarez
and Carroll?
I'm still Sturridge and Coutinho.
Suarez.
On that.
I get the quality of Coutinho. I
can't wait to see Daniel Sturridge in a high pressure side. Brilliant. What a guy. You thought he got injured a lot when we fucking didn't do that.
Yeah, but
you
he
think
wasn't
this is
injury
high
prone then.
Yeah. You think this is the high pressure side?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Well, you've been watching all season.
6 weeks ago we were. We just weren't good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let us know what you would do if it was up to you, if you could do such things in the comments.
I would do a lot of things just to watch Luis Suarez in his prime play football again.
100%.
That's kind of where it comes from. The enjoyment of watching Luis Suarez again for the next 4 years outweighs
the greatest player I've ever seen at Anfield.
Yeah. I've never enjoyed watching a footballer more than I've enjoyed watching Luis Suarez. It was disgusting how good he was at football.
So all the midfield problems can get to hell, basically, because I get to watch Suarez again for 4 years.
Yeah. My only other alternative, and it was the one that immediately came to me, the one that made me happiest, was Robbie Fowler coming back. And I'd be like, bear in mind, this is not prime Robbie Fowler. This was in the tail end of his career. But just for the vibes of just like, you can't kind of encapsulate just how happy it made us to see Robbie back at Liverpool in the number 11 shirt, which is weird. And, you know, and it was just great. And it was, we were willing him to score a goal, willing him. He had like a mad one cleared off the line, like an overhead kick in like his first game back. It might have been against Birmingham or something. And it was like, oh, come on. And then when he finally scored, it was like we'd all literally scored a goal ourselves for Liverpool. It was class. And yeah, just getting him to come back. I think he ends up getting to the point where he ends up as like a 1-in-2 striker for Liverpool, which is kind of what he deserved to be. Got his goal tally up a little bit more. Got to wear the number 9 shirt for one more season as well after that. Yeah, good.
Is there
good
a shout to bring in a pre-injury Virgil van Dijk into this side who's fit?
Yeah.
That was
like
a good
now, with Everton on the horizon as well.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he gets another goal against Everton.
A few years younger. Yeah, there is definitely a shout for that, 100%.
And then you compare him with Virgil in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, two Virgils. Or midfield's half crap, but get past this.
I mean, that could be the answer.
Maybe he could play DM.
Yeah, alongside Joel Matip.
Are we interested in that in any way, shape or form, by the way?
I'll listen. I'm
a lish. Are we Igor Biscan or Fernando Morientes? No.
Fernando, no.
No.
Okay. No,
I love Fernando Morientes.
Although
the
speed of this team, Morientes would probably fit in perfectly.
Absolutely fine.
Yeah, definitely. Quality, we had a super chat in from Scott Hawks, who's been the most generous man on the face of planet Earth this morning. A $50 super chat in. A disappointing but unsurprising day, and it feels like the ownership is already putting this season behind it in terms of their involvement. It's all in Jürgen's hands, as it always was, but now even more so, get behind the team we have, YNWA. I love that.
It's mad because you'd assume Scott would have more money than sense, wouldn't you, the amount he super chats, but he doesn't.
No.
His comments are actually sensible as well. Well and really good.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a brilliant.
Thank you, Scott.
What a brilliant
and
man.
And he gifted a few subs as
he
well.
He did indeed.
Memberships.
Yeah, he Amazing. Did. He's gifted 5 Redman TV memberships as well to Lucy R, Sylvie Ray, Callum Holmes, Chase Hambly, and David Smith have all benefited from a Scott Hawks gifted subscription.
Oh, what a guy.
He says, throwing a bit of cheer around. Good night. Oh, enjoy your kit, mate. Thanks so much for joining us. What an entrance and exit there. Just drops in, drops a happiness grenade, and then gets off. Scott Hawks, let's all be more Scott Hawks. I don't even mean you need to chuck money around, just throw some happiness grenades around the place. Ashley Frith, who's been a member for 31 months, has just lost my job and still the Reds are giving me more pain. Has there ever been a bigger drop-off in history than Fab in 6 months? Love you guys. Yeah, I know. An Elite Six says, Trent, RCM. What position is that, Clem?
Centre mid.
Right centre mid. Cool. Yeah. Also, Darwin is sexy AF. What's that mean?
Sexy as fuck.
Okay, cool.
Even I need that one, Paul.
Bears repeated.
I get loads of messages in my DMs. So it's just that I've sent them.
Yeah.
Sexy AF.
Sad. Okay, cool. We'll move things on then. We have to talk about life being a Liverpool fan right now. Let's call it the agony rant section because let's just get it all out of the way. We can encapsulate some of the Brighton game. That it's mad. I was driving home yesterday and I was thinking about the agenda for this. And that Brighton game actually felt like it was about a week ago and it was only a handful of days.
I guarantee me, who was up at 4 a.m. and didn't get back till 11, did not feel like that was a week ago.
Yeah, well, still living it.
It felt like I could have been jet lagged. To be honest, it was like Clevy's potentially gone to Mexico, yeah, and had to come all the way back. And my sleep schedules, yeah, no.
It's been better, has it?
Yeah, better days.
Why did it fuck your sleep schedule up?
Because I got up at 4 a.m. only on an hour's sleep, and then got back at 11, and obviously I slept a day
like
away on Monday.
Chloe's fucked you there. Feels like Saturday night, Chloe's fucked you.
Saturday night?
Yeah.
But it's not my, like,
I mean,
you know,
I would suggest not going to bed at 3 a.m. when you're up at 4 a.m.
It seems
it's
sensible,
not my
though,
fault, though, that is it? Because, like, you try and you just don't, sometimes you don't fall asleep. Of course you don't. I mean, good God, you're asleep by 9 p.m.
Flick a switch, honestly. I mean, this is very, I guess, off topic.
It pisses your wife off.
Oh,
it pisses
I hate
me
it.
Off when you tell
no,
me.
Yeah,
it. Oh, people hate it. I'm fully aware. Yeah. For those people that aren't aware, when I go to bed, I literally say, right, that's me. And I just turn the switch off and I'm gone. Gone for the
so
night.
Annoying.
Like,
isn't
how?
That annoying?
Minutes.
I'm not far off that. I'll read a bit and fall asleep. I don't really have, because I'm always tired. So people who say to me, like, how do you nap or how do you sleep in various places? I'm never not tired. So when I have an opportunity to get some sleep, my God, I'm getting that sleep. Come hell or high water. So no, I'm down with that.
I get people get frustrated by it because I'm fully aware that people are the opposite. But literally, when I make a decision that I'm done, I'm done. And it's happening
no,
quickly.
I feel tired around 8 p.m. And then by the time the football's finished, the late kickoff around 10, it's like I've had a second wave and I'm awake again. It's really annoying. But I could never fall asleep at 8 p.m.
Is this
like
the
you
agony
do.
Run section? Dan's sleep.
My sleep.
Yeah, we're all having a bit pissed off with Dan and having a firm grip on his life. I'm so annoyed. I'm just so annoyed with everything at the moment. And I think it speaks to how effectively I was able to compartmentalise Sunday that it has felt like it's been ages since that game
it
for me.
It feels like when Liverpool play once a week, it feels like we're having an international break every
it
week.
Does,
and
yeah,
and about now is when the fan base sort of loses its head. We all lose our heads again, which is, again, just like an international break. Do you know the one thing for me for the agony run for this week? I am really tired of existing in a grey area as a football fan.
Yeah.
Like, I need to know what's going on at the football club because then you can make proper decisions, can't you? I think, you know, if someone would have put their arm around me this week and gone, Chris, we're not going to make any signings in January, but we know Bellingham's done, I would be like, sound, I can fucking. I'm annoyed, don't get me wrong, but I'm made up that we're actually going to get you Bellingham. If someone had told me what is actually happening with the ownership of Liverpool Football Club, it would be great because it's all ifs and buts, it's all guesswork and it's all, you know, they're looking for investment here, they might be wanting to sell over here and all this type of, I just want to know one way or the other what the truth of the matter is because then I can make proper decisions based on that and make opinions based on what's happening. That's what's pissing me off. And I think it's, on a grander scale, if we all knew what was going on, there wouldn't be so much shit online.
We did a Redman reacts to the transfer window last night, didn't we, guys? And that was our, that was the kind of point we fell down on, wasn't it, Chloe? Is that there's no trust in anything at the moment, because and where there has been cast iron trust, it's being eroded because of, for a variety of reasons. So, you know, for some people, there's been no trust in the ownership for ages, but by and large, I think, broadly speaking, there has been trust because we've been successful on the pitch. But that's gone. There's the change in the sporting director situation means there's no trust that someone's going to get, who's got a real grip on the transfers. Liverpool are crap on the pitch, so there's less trust in the manager. And the players are performing, loads of the top players are being crap as well, so there's less trust that they're going to turn it round. And it leads to that thing of what we could, what we really need is some certainty. And the problem is, in the absence of certainty, that all the misery and being able, and all the kickoffs are loads louder because you've got no counterpoint to them. I can't sit here and say, be all right in the summer, because I might be wrong, and that's a really hard way to live in, because we put all our faith in so much of our happiness in Liverpool.
Yeah, it's also the feeling of, this is obviously the consequences of us not being organised for the past couple of years. And when we've been such an organised, you know, business, we've got the deals done dead early. Anyone we've really wanted and sought after, we've got, they've came to us, and you're sensing that. I don't know what's going on in the background, but people want to leave us. They don't want to be working for Liverpool Football Club anymore. And it's a case of why does it feel like we're on fire from the inside? It's one of them that no one really has any trust in anything. And I don't think, I mean, I'd love Jude Bellingham and I want to believe all the rumours that he really wants to come to Liverpool. But at the end of the day, if Real Madrid said, yeah, you can play in a sunny, you know, lovely, nice, sunny place, you've got Champions League football, which Liverpool don't have, and it's Real Madrid, then why would he want to turn that down? I think if you could promise something, or if someone knew, not to blame, but where it's going wrong, I don't know whether, like, I'm just trying to base it off. I think Jurgen Klopp's at fault at some point. I think the owners are obviously not spending enough. There's also the fact that, like, we couldn't have another player because of this homegrown talent. I want to know how long ago someone messed up the structure of Liverpool Football Club, because we went from being what everyone wanted to be to now the most disorganised, never making any signings because for some sort of reason.
Barring Everton, of course.
Everton,
yes. But also, it's
literally,
like,
can I just say something?
As well, last year, it's like so many different errors coming together.
Can I just say one thing though? Because we've seen, like, again, the increasing noise of kickoffs online, and you look at them, they exist offline as well, by the way. But there's too many people, I think, right now, who support Liverpool who don't have any Evertonians in their lives, and it shows. Yeah. Get some Evertonians in your lives. If you haven't got one, make a friend. You might have to pretend you're not a Liverpool fan to get yourself in that door. Mm-hmm. Get them and keep them close, because they don't half make you feel better about your own.
They're like a hot water bottle on a cold night.
Yes.
Takes the edge off, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely warm your cockles. Yeah,
just slightly.
And, you know, because you can't trust Man United to be that. Because Man United are too big a football club, they always come back, you know. And similarly, like, you know, Arsenal, whatever, you get your joy, if you're getting your joy from other top football clubs, then it's short-lived. It's like having joy from your own football club. You've got to find ways to get as much joy in your life. And if that's schadenfreude, if that's getting joy from the misery of others, then choose more wisely. We're blessed to be in a city where half of the population support one of the worst football clubs in the history of football. not success-wise. Everton are a massive football club, but they are so horrendously run, and it puts you in perspective where Liverpool are at. And that's no balm for some people, because Liverpool are the be all and end all. But it does. It's not. It does.
It helps.
It helps.
It soothes. It soothes the fevered brow. We're going to talk about Everton's plight. We're going to be talking about Chelsea breaking footy again. We're going to be doing all this. We've got a brand new show, which we're going to be recording after this, which is the Bias Footy podcast, but more on that later on. Anyone else? What else is doing your heads in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Chloe was really good there on the transparency or lack of from behind the scenes at Liverpool, which is obviously really annoying. There's so many things. But for me, it's something I'm actually probably never said before, but it's actually Klopp's comments. Post-match.
Oh my God, I nearly put me head through a wall really did me when I read that.
They actually really, and not often I would ever criticise that man, because I adore him. I adore everything he's ever done for Liverpool Football Club. But
it feels like we are lacking transparency and we're lacking that figurehead to come out and say, this is all going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. Klopp is in essence doing that. But whilst it's that meme when there's a dog sat at a desk and everyone's on fire around mm-hmm. him, it's like, oh, it's all good. It's quite clearly not. He was sort of, it was positive after the weekend, that defeat to Brighton, because it was better than what we did against Brighton a fortnight ago.
The comments about the fans.
The fans yeah. being from Brighton and getting some positivity because we had some shots and a goal.
But we've paid them back, Jürgen, because they've seen
and
a
you
goal.
Went, so.
Well, believe it or not, lads, I'm pretty sure that's the aim of the game here. I think we need to score goals to win games.
It was
what
really
you've got
odd.
To do.
Yeah.
Even Owen knows that.
I just don't... Yeah, I read that. I think I messaged you and said, is he taking the piss? I really did. I felt like... Everyone on that in the away end on the coach team, we all just looked at our phones collectively and thought, what is he on? Surely he's like, if he's losing the plot, that's what I'm worried about. Because I read that comment and was so confused by why that had even come out your mouth.
He's so good as well at saying the right thing at the right time, normally speaking. He's so eloquent as well. And his words on pretty much any topic, which is why so many media outlets like Sky, Talksport, etc. use him. And they sort of bait him into saying things because he's brilliant on every single topic. So it just felt really strange. And when everything around you is collapsing, we talk about the off-field stuff, on the pitch isn't great. And it's funny because we almost reveled in the fact that we didn't spend as much as the others when we were boss. Yeah. We used to sing that song, Reds Have Got the Money. We enjoyed it. But as soon as on the pitch isn't working as well, it's everything's wrong, everything's broken. So, which is right, and I get it. But when Jurgen Klopp, who has been sort of the stable man, things are hard. Like when the season we had no centre-backs, everything was a problem, but we had Klopp. We've seen him emotional a couple of times, which was hard. And then the weekend after that, which was a very slight improvement on what we've seen at Brighton previously, he comes out with those comments. It was like, it was Rafa, sort of the back end of his tenure, wasn't it? It was just odd. It just felt strange. And listen, I'm not suggesting for 1 second that he is losing the plot or he is losing any sort of realms of what's right with Liverpool Football Club, but it just felt not the opportune moment to be so falsely positive about what we'd just seen.
I agree with you. I really do. And the only way I can rationalise it is to put myself in his shoes and sort of think, why is he saying this? And it's got to be he's putting the arm around the squad. He knows it's a difficult time. That's what I think anyway, because I just can't see any other reason why he'd do it. It's not for the media and it's not for the fans. So if it's not for the media and it's not for the fans, it's kind of got to be for the players as far as I see it. Mm-hmm. If he's not lost the plot, which I don't think he's lost the plot.
No, he's not.
It's a calculated statement, I think. And I do feel like it's, you've got to play for these fans type of thing to the players. Put your arm around them and just say, like, look, it's a tough time at the moment, but we are improving. And that's something that you as a player can take out of this game. Mm. Not that I agree with it, because I thought it was a bit weird as well, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And also sometimes it is like, you've got to let people, I think it comes from a statement of you've got to let people know that it's not maybe as bad, or does he project? It's like projecting confidence to some extent, of being like, you know, like projecting positivity to try and arrest the fucking emotional slide that everyone's kind of going through at the moment. There's nothing better than feeling like somebody when someone who knows what they're doing comes out and says that everything's kind of all right.
That's like with Robbo, isn't it? Like, you know, he's come out the last few weeks, but like now it's like, all right, you're saying the same thing every week. There's got to be an improvement at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and again, this is the thing about Jürgen, is that it goes back to your not knowing thing. Is that he knows more than us, and that's in a wide variety of subjects, by the way.
Almost every
subject. But he clearly knows more what's going on behind the scenes at Liverpool. He's watching the lads in training. They're working on stuff. Yeah, well, yeah, obviously. And in terms of like, and he's been the one at the cold face of it all. He's now the one fronting up the entirety of Liverpool Football Club. And I remain hopeful that it's nowhere near as bad as we fear it all is, because I don't know whether he would be able to. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who could really keep his feelings totally in check. He's gotten better at that, but he's a very emotional guy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if everything was absolutely on fire, then he would be a little bit more agitated about things than he is. The problem he's got is, and I think this is it's almost like if he could come out and reset the expectations. Some people might not like them, but I'd feel a bit comforted by it, of going, well, are we, because we're all posing the analysis, Liverpool are in a transitional season. It's inescapable. That's clearly what we are, which has been made loads worse by tons of injuries on top of it, of course. But he's obviously talked about building the next side. Maybe that needs to be a little bit more of like the, we need some t-shirts printed up, you know what I mean? Or, you know, right?
It's hard to put glasses on with a cap, apparently.
Oh.
For me.
Wow. Yeah, I'd feel a bit more calmed by it, but you're right, at the moment it's like we could really have done with at the end of the season, everyone who was going to move on comes out on Anfield and takes a bow and then goes and we're off, you know what I mean? Like it's the end of the show and they all clap off into the sun, and then we could go, right, they're all gone, this is what's happening. But because it's all happening higgledy-piggledy and we're moving players on and board members and blah blah blah, it feels like it's a shit show. Whereas you've got to hope that behind the scenes there is a bit more of a through line. I mean, again, it sounds like pure naivety.
It was just weird for me that, like, I just don't. You can see, obviously, that Brighton game, he looked absolutely decimated, but you could see in the last several weeks that the fans inside the stadium are supporting you, the behind you, the Wolves reaction after that. Like, Jürgen knows we're with us, like, we're with him, and like, with the team, we know that we've got, this is the team that's got to get us through it. He might as well support them instead of bringing them down. Bringing them down inside the stadium isn't going to help them.
Yeah.
It's just going to add to the panic and the pressure that's going on. And like, that away end was decent. The away end was bouncing. And I think we've seen it online on Twitter, some of the videos from it. So to turn around and come out with these mad comments, it just, the place and the time just wasn't correct. After you just had an away end that was bouncing, you concede in like the 95th or whatever the hell it was minute, to a goal where someone's had three touches and being able to put it in the back of the net when there's four of us and one of them's turned the back. Like, it just felt very weird to come out and say something. Like, we've paid them back, though, because even though the majority of them work every single day of their lives to just come and support us, you know, we've paid them back because we've gave them a goal. That's not how it works. And it just felt like a very un-Klopp thing to say.
Yeah, a little bit, maybe a little bit tone deaf on that one. I
You know, also on the like, what's going on behind the scenes at Liverpool and stuff, right? I don't know whether this is true, so correct me if I'm wrong at the start of this, please. Have Liverpool tried to buy Melwood back off Jamie Carragher?
For the women's team.
This seem like something a well-organised fucking unit would do? Sell something and 2 years later buy it fucking back?
Not particularly.
No. Not really. Like,
joined up thinking, is it?
No, not, way, not when it's essentially a purpose-built training facility for football teams, yeah, or was,
yeah,
with pitches. Like, does that not feel like a really stupid thing to have let go if you're then considering putting the women's team into somewhere?
Also, though, Matheus Nunes,
depends what you're buying it back
for. Let him go, you say, don't really want to take a point on him, but don't worry, we'll pay over the price in a year when we actually want him. Seems weird.
Also,
that's another one.
The thing yesterday about having no contingency plan, and like you say, Paul, there probably is more alignment behind the scenes and we're sort of privy to, but there was a report yesterday about not having a contingency or successor to Julian Ward in place when it happens. They're going to let him go and then go and get the successor of a sporting director, which just seems, it doesn't seem normal to me. It doesn't seem the way we've done business, and that's what's so strange about it. FSG, as much as people criticise them and rightly so in some aspects, have always sort of had that nailed down, if you like, but right now, for whatever reason, it isn't at
it
all.
It feels like there's a lot of things that need to happen, and we're all focused on the football team because that's what we do, that's what we support. But then the deeper you go, it's like, oh, you know, like, again, what happens if no sale happens in the next 12 months? Yeah. Does somebody step into Mike Gordon's role? Does Mike Gordon come back to that role? The talk is that Billy Hogan and Jürgen Klopp are going to be picking the sporting director. That feels a little bit...
It kind of makes sense, that, from what Dan's just said, though, doesn't it? Because I know it feels a bit like, you know, the horse leading the cart. Is that the right phrase?
The cart before the horse.
Putting the cart before the horse, sorry, yeah. So it feels a bit like that, doesn't it? But ultimately, if you're not picking a director of football until the summer, then your manager is leading the search for the players, in which case they may as well lead the search for the director of football, because you're now not getting a director of football in to lead the search for the players.
Well, no,
seems a bit mad to
me.
No,
what they're saying is Julian Ward will be doing all of that stuff, all the transfer stuff up until that point, which is probably one of the reasons why they're not, because his job is set up until that point, is what they're saying. So you don't need to get the director of football in now. But again, it depends. You don't know what the transfer scenario is going to be like. Does he walk out the door and then something collapses or something opens up later in the window, and then we've got a real crossover period where we miss out again. Yep. Uncertainty is the name of the game. But it is a bit weird that and I suppose it speaks to they put all their eggs into the Jurgen Klopp basket. You sign the contract and they're just doubling down. So again, it goes back to it doesn't really matter. And maybe that's a kind of our problem with this season, which is doubly frustrating. And might go back to what Jurgen knows more than us, is he knows it doesn't really matter how bad we are this season to some extent, which sounds it sounds worse than it probably is in reality. What I mean is that no one's losing the job, and they know that they've got it. There'll become a point where this season will be unrecoverable. Mm. So at what point do you change your attentions to next season? Which I know makes me want to be sick in my mouth as well when I hear it, because we've got to live through that. We've got to watch every game. We've got to emotionally throw ourselves on the line for every game. But that's the weird. That's what that all feels like. It feels very much like steady and calm, or trying to be as steady and calm as possible in a quite a tumultuous situation. But it's not making me feel any more relaxed about the whole thing, because again, goes back to what I was saying about the trust thing. It all feels very unlike the Liverpool that we've seen so far. It feels like we've finally fallen back into that thing of the manager's now the ultimate figurehead at the football club. And he's kind of been that, but we've had Peter Moore had a big role at the club at one point or another. Obviously, Billy Hogan's been in there. Mike Gordon's had a big role. And now it's like very much like it's Jurgen Klopp FC. Mm-hmm. And we build everything else around them, which is I'm not against, because there's no better manager for that. Mm. And we very much are the kind of football club who like having that, you know. But that's until we see that work, feels a bit odd.
We are, and I'm okay with it, because like I've already stated, I absolutely adore Jurgen Klopp and I think the man's a genius. However, whenever we've done something successful, win the Premier League, Champions League, whatever it may be, in the aftermath of that, Jurgen Klopp has been at pains to say how much of a team effort it's been from every single person within Melwood, as it was previously, or Kirby, as it is now, down to the cleaning staff, etc., etc. So it makes you wonder if some of his key members, obviously Michael Edwards has already gone, Julian Ward's on his way out, and sporting directors and managers need to work really closely together, obviously. So it does make you wonder if all these key figures are going, and we're now saying, okay, Jurgen, I know you've been really sort of big on the team ethic and how much you wouldn't have done what you've done if it wasn't for XYZ, to then suddenly let so many of them people go. How long were we without a club doctor for at the start of the season?
Yeah.
That was months on end, yeah, wasn't it? And that just seems so bizarre, the way we've been run previously. It just seems a little bit ad hoc and in flux, and that's not like us at all.
I agree with that, mate, to be honest with you. It's kind of worrying, to be honest, because, you know, as everybody sort of touched upon, like, Jurgen's a football manager. That's what he's brilliant at. And it always feels a bit like, I don't want to say that this is what Jurgen's doing, but like, if the ship's going down, at some point the captain has to stand up and steady it themselves, mm-hmm, and not put trust into, yeah, anybody else. And you do become a little bit more egotistical in that regard. And if you feel like it's struggling and someone's not doing their job properly, sometimes some people will just go, well, I'm just going to do it. Like, you know what I mean? And that kind of feels what Jurgen's doing, yeah, at the absolutely moment. And you can quite easily spread yourself too thin doing that.
Yeah, and they do need to be careful. And that's what this whole thing is, just a fucking mess, because there's so many things that need to be fixed. And it does feel like another... Well, it's another null and void season for Liverpool, but that doesn't change the fact that we've got to live in it. It's so annoying. Yeah. There's nothing worse than being in January. We nearly had this last January, if you remember, where, you know, look at the league, look absolutely dead and buried. Mm. And we were in that situation where, well, hang on, we've been a bit inconsistent in the league. What do we do? How do you live a Premier League campaign with nothing really to play for? Little did we know, you know, we were going to comfortably cruise top four regardless, but that felt like a nothing thing. At the moment, we can't even guarantee that we're going to win the next game, let alone like probably four or five on a bounce to really get ourselves into some sort of shape to have any ambitions of finishing in the top four or whatever. It just feels.
The biggest thing for me, sorry to interrupt, mate, is if you are putting it all onto next season and stuff, I think that's crazy for a start. From a competitive standpoint, I think that's really difficult to drive into your players anyway. You can't possibly let them know that. You're not going to get 100%. You're not going to get them. And it's not easy to switch it back on when it comes around to next season. But also, something that Emma Sanders said to us years ago, and I think you'll probably remember it, but she said, like, look, it takes a long time to build up an aura around the football club that the teams are beaten when they take the field, and you can lose it like that. You can't just hope that aura comes back at the start of next season. You need to build that up today, yeah, so that next season you're not building up speed, you're at full pelt before you go, and that you get those points on the board and stuff. It's just very difficult right now, and teams don't fear Liverpool. We need to put them in a position where they fear us again before next season, if that's the plan.
We're in such a weird position, aren't we? Look, let's talk the transfer window, because obviously no more reinforcements came in. We obviously went for Cody Gakpo. Chloe and Dan spoke about this on Redmen Reacts, which you can check out on Plus right now if you want to, but not to tread too much on it. I'll ask you about this, Chris. It's obviously knowing Evertonians helps, but in reality, that's like a ha-ha-ha kind of moment when you see Arsenal top of the league, doubling down, strengthening the squad, Chelsea going absolutely bananas, which we'll do a big old chat on the Bias Footy show. There's more to it than just going by a midfielder, because there's lots more moving parts to how Liverpool are kind of set up and what have you. But again, it goes back to like your knowledge as a football fan. Most people aren't aware of rules like the homegrown and non-homegrown and your squad quotas and registering players and blah, blah, blah. So everyone's just going, we should have bought more midfield. It feels fucking mad. We've gone from a summer where it was identified that we clearly needed a midfielder. We bought a midfielder on a loan who's been injured ever since. We've got no idea whether he's good enough. That's a situation that we've fucked. Unless he comes back and he's actually quite good, which again, we can't know.
He's been out for so long, he'll need 3 months to get back to speed anyway.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly know
whether up to speed's good enough.
Yeah, but it all feels like a little bit of a mess. It's been made so clear we needed a midfielder. Chloe was saying this yesterday. We clearly wanted Tchouaméni, didn't get him. We clearly decided late in the window we needed a midfielder. We went and got Artemelo in on loan. Here we are, half a season later, having gone through another transfer window, and no more has been done to bolster that situation other than promoting Stefan Bacetic to being a senior player, which has been great, by the way. In a very general sense, it just feels really frustrating. And again, it boils down to this idea of, I don't know who the names are, but I can't see that it's outside the realms of possibility. There must have been someone somewhere. Where's the Red Bull Group's lad who's got another £10 million release clause that we could have had a little sniff around to those kind of things?
There's got to be 50 players out there that could have improved Liverpool this window. There just has to be. Like, you might not be who you want, and it might eat into that transfer budget. Don't give a shit, to be quite honest with you. You know, I look at what Chelsea have done in terms of the way that they've spread the contracts out, and they're using that loophole. Use the fucking loophole while it exists. Mm. You know what I mean? If it's there now and it's not going to be there in the summer, now's the only time you get to use that loophole. So go and do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've got there's a bigger opinion on that. I think that loophole is, I think Chelsea are fucking stupid. They are the biggest fucking stupid.
It can go one of two ways, can't it? That's the ultimately, it can look like absolutely incredible business, and it can look like absolutely terrible business if you end up with 40 players who were on a ridiculous amount of money. But I'm not asking for 40 players. I'm asking for one player.
Yeah.
And one player makes a big difference to this Liverpool squad right now. And so you could have used that loophole and spread the cost over the next few years instead of, look, Mudrick, for example, is what, £10 million a year they're spending on that? You're telling me that affects Bellingham? Does it? No. £10 million? I'm not sure it does, to be quite honest with you. You know, so why couldn't you use the loophole?
Yeah.
Why didn't they use the loophole while it's there?
Yeah. Yeah. No,
for someone who wants to be one of the smartest operators in world football, to see somebody else do it again and again and again and again and not utilise it while you can, that seems a little bit silly to me.
Yeah. Again, it boils down to it. What Liverpool needed to buy was an under 21. If you either buy a homegrown player or someone under the age of 21. I don't know what that pool of players looks like. I don't know who those players are.
No.
But again, this is why I feel a bit stupid to often saying these things, because I haven't got the answer. And there'll be people in the comments, you'll probably know. I'll clear a much wider pool of knowledge when it comes to football players globally. We had the argument about Casado a few weeks ago. He would have been a solution to that because he's under 21. We probably wouldn't have been able to register for the Champions League, which is another thing. But his price the issue?
Yeah, has to have been. Because we talk about eating into the Bellingham money. That sort of money then does eat into what you want to do with Bellingham. For me, you want to be sort of probably half of what they wanted for Casado, a sort of 35-45 million pound footballer. And like Chris alludes to, that improves our squad. That improves what we want to do now, because I don't think we're asking for go and get Bellingham, go and get Enzo Fernandez even. Go and get a very good Premier League level footballer who we can just add into the mix of rotation, which gives Fabinho more rest, Henderson more rest, Thiago probably most importantly more rest. Naby Keita a chance to not start every single game, which we know exclusively he can't do. So I think there was definitely options there. You're right about the homegrown stuff and the quotas and the registration, but you can always bend and flex around that. I'm pretty sure Adrian's still registered, so you could deal with that situation right there. So
It's a difficult one for me, but there had to be options in this window and we haven't gone and done it. And it feels like an oversight. And to come back to what we were saying before about sort of saying, okay, we're just going to wait till the summer. That's what we've done. We've just said, we're going to write this season off. What will be for the rest of the season. Now, Jurgen Klopp, you're a miracle worker. You might do something magic again, but it's over to you now, mate, on your own. That's what you've got. Yeah.
We went into the Champions League final having doubts over Thiago's fitness and Naby Keita's fitness and stuff, didn't we? And then all summer long, everybody knew we needed a midfielder and we were told we didn't need a midfielder. We didn't need a midfielder. And then we signed a midfielder that we can't play. So that back in the summer, we identified that we were a midfielder shy.
Mm, yeah.
And we've not added any midfielders.
Well, we have. We added Artemelo, who's subsequently injured.
Since Artemelo, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We added that midfielder. Yeah. He didn't play. He hasn't played 6 minutes. So we're in net zero
in terms
of midfielders, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we identified a problem, signed a midfielder to fix it on a fucking loan who hasn't played, therefore we haven't really added anybody. Therefore we're in the same boat we were in the summer.
All he's done, simple as that. All Melo's done is exacerbate the existing problem. Though, yeah. Is that he's another lad who we're paying for, who we can't get rid of, who's stuck at the football club eating up a space.
Yep.
And you know what I mean? It's like, you know, he's your fat litter analogy, Chris. Bought another fucking, another useless cushion for the couch. You know, it's going to look great from a distance. Wow, look at all them cushions. Doesn't that look pretty? But in reality, you can't actually use any of them. Doesn't ease your comfort in it. They're all getting lashed off to the side.
Yeah, it's because you spend fucking £3,000 on sofas and you put £15 cushions on them.
Yeah,
what's the fucking point is that?
And that's what we're doing. That's what Liverpool have got. They've got a ton of £15 cushions.
Sheesh.
Yeah, I know. It's
it does look like a £15 cushion as well. When he came on against that size of that. You can tell he hadn't played footy for a little bit.
Stone cushions.
It's funny because everyone's kind of looking at Chelsea now. We're going to talk about it later about breaking football. And what they've done has been a little bit mental. Let's not beat around the bush. With the scattergun, you want him, we're going to sign him instead. Just looking at what other people are doing. But on the flip side of that, a lot of people, and probably rightfully so, would say that what we've done, our inaction, has also been a little bit mental. Like us not doing anything and not addressing this issue that we're all very well versed on that we've got seems crazy to me. And to not act is mad.
It's just reaping what we sow, isn't it? Of like, not being able to move players on in the years gone by, we're left with a bunch of footballers whose contracts are running down, who've got no resale value anymore, and now this is where we're at. Liverpool need to go above and beyond. They need to go up above. They need to break the net spend thing. You need to spend beyond your means a little bit to kind of get us back to where we were, because you can't trust it. You can't trust it anymore. Mane should have been the biggest alarm bell going over that. And I know there's probably a little bit of like, look, we'll shake hands with Bayern Munich, you know, ha ha ha. They just turned up to negotiations with a picture of Thiago and went, come on then. And we went, all right, fair play. But that was a 70, 80, 90 million pound footballer, you know, and we allowed that situation to develop because we were too cautious. Mm-hmm. A similar situation with the Divock Origi stuff. And ultimately, a lot of this comes down to someone's got to want to buy these players at some point in the past. And I think that's what's fucked us more than anything, is that if only someone had just come and offered some decent money for Oxlade-Chamberlain or Naby Keita in the summer, we might have been in a different boat. But again, it goes back to Jürgen's point, and I can only go off what he says in this, because I'm not angry about it, but when he says we've got all these midfielders, I don't think he means we've got 10 fucking world-class midfielders. He's just saying there's only so many midfielders I can own at a football club at any given time, and that's not his job to get rid of them. Someone else has made the mistake of not sorting that situation out. And I mentioned this on Reacts. Oxlade-Chamberlain choosing not to move last January, that's on Oxlade-Chamberlain. He stuck it out now. Naby Keita's not signing a new contract, and I don't know who in their right mind would have paid money for an injured Naby Keita in the summer. But it just leads to ultimate frustration, because Ubatis, and you said this yesterday, Chloe, well, fuck them off. Just deregister someone. I don't give a shit. And like, that's where we're at. We're asking Jürgen Klopp to fucking compromise his personal morals on how he deals with footballers in order to save a Liverpool season, which is just speaks to how everything's just a bit
if
fucked.
Someone's going in the summer anyway, I'm really not arsed. I'm not arsed at this point. If you've played, what, how many starts has Naby Keita made where he's played like 90 minutes?
It might be 20 now. But he started like 3 games on the bounce,
But at this point, I mean, he'll still be useful for us in the Champions League.
I mean, he's a first choice midfielder for us at the moment.
But there's just so many players in our squad who we've just kept them there far too long. And whether it's because no one was interested in them or not, you don't give them another contract then and say, no, we'll protect your value. You just let them go. If they're not in your plans, just let them go. Cut ties, because eventually what it has caused is this build-up of players where we now can't sign anyone because of that. But guess what? I'd be surprised if we didn't have a single midfielder and Ox was picked in the midfield. He'd pick someone we'd never heard of. He'd pick a fan out of the crowd before he picked Oxlade-Chamberlain's playing this midfield at this moment. He doesn't like him. I just don't think he does. And especially not in midfield. There is, sometimes you've just got to be ruthless. And I think other clubs have that about them, and I don't think we do. And when push comes to shove, there are just some times where you're stuck between a pillar and a wall and you've got to say, right, well, I've just got to do this. And yet, I absolutely loved you. And, you know, I don't want to go off on bad terms or anything. But for the better of the club, for the better of what happens this season, for the fact that we could have a chance of doing something instead of it just being another season where we've won nothing, then you've got to be ruthless.
I suppose it's a good example of this is how Arsenal managed to turn the ship around. Was in that it was just like, it was basically just throwing players out. Mm-hmm. You know, it was taking a bath on some footballers and going, right, anything we can do to get that, we'll pay the wages, we'll pay whatever, just get them off. And it looks stupid at the time, but you have to take extreme measures sometimes in extreme situations. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe whether it's a weakness or it's a, in a very broad sense, it's one of Jürgen Klopp's biggest strengths, and it's helped get us where we are, squad unity, squad harmony, getting the best out of the sum, you know, more than the sum of your parts. But yeah, maybe this is that example of that where we mentioned it on React, where Mesut Ozil sits there unregistered for half a season until they can finally shift him. And I don't know exactly how Liverpool could have worked that, because Naby Keita's the example. Imagine if we deregistered Naby Keita and now we were stuck with him and he'd not been able to play in the last few games. Adrian, you tell Adrian that he's not registered anymore. What does that do to the goalkeeper situation and the harmony around all that? I don't know.
I would just like to put ourselves back into the summer. I think to do what you say, and I agree, there are times and a place where you have to do that type of thing, but you can't tell me that Jürgen Klopp, after just going for a run of a quadruple, would ever in a million years think that was the time to do it, that we were that fucked, that was the time to fuck the midfielders off, because you can't possibly think like that after the season we had last year.
Yeah.
You might think, it might be a little bit harder this year, but you can't possibly envision what's happened to us. Not when you've just gone to the Champions League final, nearly won the league, missed out by a point, and won the both cups. You just can't. You're not like fucking Nostradamus. You know what I mean? You just,
and loads
there's
of people,
no way we would think, I've got that to fuck Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita because we just nearly won four trophies.
That's not what I'm asking. But what I'm saying now is, you come to the part where now we've still got to register Gakpo and these kind of players for the Champions League. Well, Curtis Jones, you've hardly played for us at all this season, and when you have, you haven't had, I can't bet on you to have a string of games so you can come into form, therefore I'm going to have to choose this player over.
Yeah, but you've got Kenseth has to be registered because he's a genuine homegrown footballer.
Yes, I totally get it, but what I'm saying is, these are I'm not saying that you just turn around to Ox and say you're done, you're out, but when he has to get in that position, he wasn't in the position back then, but there are reasons like now where when Brighton might have had interest, okay, lad, we need you to go on a loan and then you can go to them, loan it out and you can, you know, you're on a free anyway, so if they don't like you, someone else will have you. Yeah. But try and fit into their system, try and have a go then, and we'll give you a loan. And what that means is potentially we can bring someone else in who can play for us, who can hit the ground running, even if it is only a loan ourselves. When we were never in that position where we have to be ruthless, but I think we have at times, because there have been times where we probably could have sold Ox and we probably could have sold Naby Keita, because now everyone's like, we're looking at it now and Naby Keita starts, but several seasons ago, even several weeks ago when he was still injured, people are just getting bored of it happening. And what I'm saying is at times you need to cut ties with players, and you can still do that in a respectful way if you do it at the right time. But if you're keeping hold of players far too long and then this clog happens, that's when the problem is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't know when that time would have been.
Exactly, and that's the problem.
That's all I'm saying.
I think, I totally agree on that. But that's where circumstances get used, get called excuses or get labelled negatively when everyone's in a bad mood over it. Said this, the time to sell Naby Keita, you had your last chance to sell Keita and Ox was in the summer, and they were both injured all summer. They both got injured. Naby Keita missed the start of the season. So you were fucked both ways. You couldn't sell them and you couldn't play them. So we were left with two lads who were absolute dead weight on the books. That's why they're not registered in the Champions League. And even worse, it goes back to how Liverpool have just been so fucking stupid, if you're really angry, really unlucky when you look at it from the other perspective. Both of them became available back to fitness before the Champions League finished, and we couldn't use them. And we couldn't use them in the Champions League. Now, as it turned out, we didn't need them. We did really well in the Champions League group stages. But how much of that a knock-on impact did that have? Could we have used them for the last game and put a couple more minutes back in the legs and then solved some injury issues?
Klopp was fuming about that.
He was, yeah. And that for me stemmed back to not having a doctor. Maybe. We didn't have a doctor at the time. We didn't have somebody overseeing that department saying, "Oh, do you know what? Them two lads, there's a good chance they'll be back by the time the Champions League kicks in." So that is another sort of case in point.
Kind of, sorry, Danny, I just want to up on this. Sorry, this because I know what this all sounds like. We're complaining about all these little bits and pieces, and I know there'll be people watching and listening going, "It's FSG." The problem is, it's not FSG. Don't handle the day to day run. It's Billy Hogan, and it's Jürgen, and it's Julian Ward, and it's Mike Gore. It's the people who work within the football club. There's a cacophony of mistakes that have been made in across all departments that have, and in addition to then the Liverpool's transfer policy throughout COVID and blah 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 blah. All of this has led us to here. Mm-hmm. Not one moment has led us to here, and it's led to a situation where we're talking about in January. Well, we need to fuck players off. Well, there's no one to fuck off. You know, because this is where Jürgen's trying to just put the positive spin on stuff is because he is a realist and he's a pragmatist and he's not the kind of guy who cries about what he has or hasn't got. He looks at what he has got and tries to make it work. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're back to the trust thing. We've got to trust him to get it right, but we're trying stuff and we're not getting it right. We really needed that win at the weekend.
Yeah,
really fucking needed it. I needed a replay. We needed another game of football just to go again, just to try and make things work, just to buy a bit of time waiting for the fucking injured lads to come back. But we're now left in a situation where we're looking at the Champions League. It's all or nothing on a fucking a two-legged tie against the European champions who have spent and replenished their midfield with top stars and been ruthless with certain of their players.
And they've beaten us at our best.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've got too many who, so much of it, I know we've already mentioned his name, but you, on your point, Chris, a minute ago about the time in the summer, Jürgen Klopp, we quite clearly noticed we need another midfielder. And you're right, nobody could have foreseen what had happened to so many of them. And I think Fabinho is probably the biggest point. Nobody could have predicted his drop-off. It's been absolutely monumental. It's come from nowhere. He was brilliant last season. A couple of games here and there, you might point to and say, oh, I don't know about that. But generally, he was superb. So for him to go for that to this, that's probably our biggest issue. But on top of that, although you're right, you wouldn't have got rid of Ox because of what we've just done. You wouldn't have got rid of Keita. But clearly, somebody had identified we needed one and we didn't go and get one. And on top of that, Fabinho's fell off a cliff.
Well, we filled that Jordan squad Henderson. Space with Artemelo.
Exactly.
Is what we chose to do. And we chose to do it on a loan deal that couldn't be cancelled. So we can't send them. So we couldn't send them back. So if that were with that,
that's, you know, all loan deals now, isn't it?
Yeah. But you could have done I don't know the full rules. I know Inter Premier League, it's got to be a year. I don't know if international ones they can be short or whatever. I don't know. But yeah.
By the way, I'm not saying at any point in January should we have cut ties with players. What I'm saying is, though, when you hold on to players, so Divock Origi, for example, we let him run his contract down, which was Sam. I love Divock Origi, but we're then stuck between well, he doesn't want to sign another contract with us now, so do we sell him and maybe get some money? And, you know, do we need him for that extra year? And I love Divock Origi. I was happy, you know, the Wolves last minute winner that he scored, the big moments he had, Everton, where he obviously scores the header. Like, in theory, we were right to keep Divock Origi. But at some point, when you look at these players that are fringe players to Jürgen Klopp, Divock Origi was never starting week in, week out. He was coming in for different games. That's when you've got to make your decision of, okay, do I sell him a year earlier and get 20 mil for him? Do I let him run his contract out? Because he doesn't want to sign another one because he wants first team minutes. And he goes for a free and goes off somewhere. And then we have to spend money to go and replenish that player back. That's where we've slightly got it wrong. And that's what I mean by the clog of players. Because sometimes we've said, yeah, we'll extend your contract. Because actually, Nat Phillips, for example, you're worth about 15 million. You can play for another Premier League club, but there's another player to add to the books. And when it's not homegrown, which Nat Phillips is, that's when it's a problem.
Yeah, the Divock Origi stuff, and we did this with Genie as well, and I think the quadruple fucked us in more ways than we could ever really have realised at the time. At some point, the decision's made, and I wonder whether, in hindsight, you might be right, you sell Divock Origi, but if you sell Origi and Taki Minamino, for example, earlier on, you can't go for a quadruple, because they were both integral parts of that quadruple chase, and that's what happened last season. I think we put everything into immortality, and we stopped thinking about the next season, because we had no choice but to put all our energies into this. There's a chance for us to do something no other team's ever done. This is the pinnacle. This is everything this team's done. You know, we could have had doubles along the way. We could have been picking up leagues and Champions Leagues. And right now we're on this run to win and everything. And they've everyone at that club bought in, put the foot to the floor, and we chose clearly that there was more value in keeping Divock Origi for the full length of the season, as one example of this, than the 10 million quid we were going to get. He was worth that amount of money to us to keep him at the football club for that time. And the same goes for a couple of other lads. Again, the Mane situation. Yeah. You'd have cashed in on Mane a year earlier if you'd been a bit smarter on that. But imagine if we'd not had Sadio Mane last year. Imagine if we brought in, let's say we brought Gakpo in a year earlier and he'd not hit the ground running. Mane absolutely dragged us through the back end of last season. And that's, again, we can lament all the things that are done in the past, but we took our shot and we're living in the aftermath of the biggest shot Liverpool have at any club's ever taken.
I'm not saying these individuals. So Divock Origi, I'm just using as him as an example in terms of fringe players. So we all aren't surprised that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's not on the first choice. We're not surprised that he's had some really horrific injuries. At some point, you have to realise at that moment, and these, I'm just using players, I'm not actually using specifically Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I would have sold him, I'm using them as examples of fringe players who come in for the odd game here and there, or if there's really catastrophic injuries like we have had up top, then Ox comes in and plays left wing. That's where, over the last couple of years, we've probably not been as on top of it, where, okay, well, he's not in Jürgen's favourite. You know, we can bring a Takumi Minamino in for 7 mil if we can get 25 mil out of him and stuff like that.
Do you think the problem with that?
I think Chloe's right there, but also, like, there's a lot to be said for the players knowing what they're doing when they get into the side. Because it's all well and good, but, like, if the money wasn't there to replace Jordan Henderson or Thiago or Fabinho, there was no need to replace Jordan Henderson, Thiago or Fabinho. You're buying a fringe player. Now, a fringe player that takes time and needs games to understand the system, when they're not getting games to understand the system, you may as well keep the player that knows the system. Like, you know what I mean? So there's the flip side to both of these things. My point would be, in agreement, is Liverpool, if Liverpool's model is sell to buy, they have to sell.
Yeah.
For good money. We've stopped selling for good money, which has hampered our ability to buy for good money. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest issue, not the fringe players.
Yeah.
It's actually, we need to get rid of and Nat Phillips is a fringe player, but like when we got the chance to sell him for 15 after we finished top four, that was your shooting shot then.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? That was it. He's never going to be worth more.
That was peak.
Nat Phillips. Yeah. I think you probably could have got somebody in who could have replaced him for less
and
money than that.
And there's a slight problem with our youth recruitment in that regard of why is Nat Phillips 25 years old still hanging around the squad like he's 20?
Yeah.
You know who is the young lad who's meant to, Billy Kometi has not stepped up. Obviously, Reece is still kicking around to cancel his loan.
They had a little run on Seb Vandenberg and all those types of players.
And he's injured now anyway. He broke his ankle, didn't he? But the what you're saying, and I totally agree with this, by the way. So I think Liverpool are in this mindset as well. Don't buy fringe players. Never ever buy a fringe player, because if you buy fringe players, at some point you're going to need them. What you're meant to do is you buy better. Yep. You buy better than your first team.
Hendo becomes a fringe player.
Exactly. Yes. And that's how we got ourselves to top, but I don't think we've handled being at the top very well. I don't think we've quite figured how to take that next step. And we might have done, but a lot of the lads we've brought in have been injury prone themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we might have done it with the front three. Like if Diogo Jota's been fit all season, you know, this might be half as big a problem as we feel it is right now. If he's got 20 goals at this point of the campaign, then we might be absolutely fucking laughing. Same goes with Diaz. Canate's had his injury problems, injured again. You know, we've tried it. The midfield's where all the focus on. And a lot of people go, well, we should have bought Sander Berge, or we should have bought, you know, Jorginho was a 31, was moving for less than £20 million. It's like, there's a lot of this feels like us doing a lot of the same shit that we're doing already, buying injury prone footballers. But if you start buying lads who aren't of the quality, what's the point? Your point is that, what's the point? You've got lads who are of the quality already, but at least they know the squad, and you know they fit and they mesh well with the people off the pitch. There's lots of unseen benefits to that. Liverpool are not wrong in only wanting to target brilliant footballers, but brilliant footballers don't always mean £100 million footballers. Yes. We can target brilliant footballers who are, there must be value for money.
I entirely get that. I think what that boils down to for me is you have to cut your cloth accordingly. And Chris is right in the point, and you're both right in the point, is you've got these fringe players who know the system, they know how we play. And when they are fit and available, they can go in there and do a job for us. We've seen it with Naby Keita, we've seen it with Ox. They are capable of doing that. However, when Jurgen Klopp sat in a press conference, I remember it vividly, in the summer before this season really kicked into gear, he named the midfielders because people then were asking him questions about, are you going to go and strengthen the midfield? He said, I've got this type of player, this type of player. But then when you sort of dig a little bit deeper behind those names, you go, yeah, but he's only available 40, 50% of the time. And that's still the case now. That's why, for me, you are right, Paul, in terms of you want a certain level of quality to come in. However, if you add a level of quality, not maybe the level, and he's not better than Henderson on his best day, for instance, but he's available a hell of a lot. And also, I think one thing we're missing here, you mentioned Luis Diaz. We were doing it from a position of massive strength. Our season was already going well, and then we added Diaz to the pot, and it was like, watch him go. Maybe there's a little bit in this whereby if we'd have just added a fresh face, it might give us that little bit of impetus. It might cheer Klopp up, the squad.
We have.
Look at Artemelo. I mean, in January. Gakpo, yeah, maybe we had, but the midfield is the issue, is my point.
I agree.
We've already got five forwards. Like, the attacking line,
but we haven't, though, have we? Can I just say, Gakpo's not exactly set the world alight.
No.
But I can appreciate why we've bought Gakpo.
Yeah.
Because what would our front three have been for the last three games if Gakpo hadn't been there?
I really like him, and I think he will be a good player, and you're absolutely right. However, the whole world, Liverpool world and beyond, thinks we need a midfielder.
Agreed.
So why did we not add the midfielder? Yeah. Just for the... Even the rest of the midfield lads might have gone, here's a lad to help us out a bit.
And this is where we're never going to know the answer.
I know.
This is where it comes back to my agony rant of just understanding the plan would probably help people.
If there
is indeed a plan. If there's no plan, great, I'm fucking burning the world down. Because this is stupid, by the way, the fact that Liverpool haven't signed the midfielder. It's fucking crazy. But also, on the midfielder point, who's buying Naby Keita and Ox when they're injured?
Yeah. No, I get it.
No.
How much was Wijnaldum?
20-odd,
exactly.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. So if you sold Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I know you're going to turn around and say he doesn't get all the game time.
He's going to buy him.
He's going to buy him.
No, finish your point. Go on.
But my point being is, you can still get a really decent levelled footballer for the price of 30, 40 mil. You don't have to go and spend 75 mil. And this is my thing. We wanted Tchouaméni. He didn't pick us. That's fine. When you're competing with Real Madrid, Barcelona, you should know that you're not always first choice. You're not always going to be first choice, no matter how good you are, because it's them. And this is my problem. You need to have a backup option in case that does happen. And the backup option doesn't need to be a Jude Bellingham instead of Tchouaméni, because they're the two players we wanted. And that's what I mean. If you sold... And I totally get your point. And I'm going back to Ox again just because he's a fringe player, not because I feel like we could get loads of money out of him and because people would want to buy him. But if you could sell him a little bit earlier, if you knew he weren't going to be in your plans and you got more money for him, well, it's only going to cost me 10 more million to go out and buy a 40 mil player bring him in. And that's
what Liverpool have been brilliant at doing.
Yeah.
And as I said, we said this before, that market evaporated for two seasons. The Championship to low end Premier League clubs who had silly money to spend on players coming from top sides, the Bournemouth of this world, who we've rinsed time and time and time again. Sheffield United, for Ryan Brewster, that market evaporated. That undercut what we were doing, so we had to keep lads around. And just, I know it wasn't your big point, but I've seen a lot of people talking about this when they go, we got Jeannie Wijnaldum on the cheap, we got Andy Robertson on the cheap. They were coming in and upgrading on rubbish at the time. It actually wasn't a huge step up to get, to bring Jeannie Wijnaldum. And that was a bit of a mad move, by the way, at the time, if we remember. He was a winger from Newcastle and played him centre mid, and it was crazy. And then we ended up crying that he wasn't playing as a 10 like he does for Holland by the end of it. But Andy Robertson was upgrading on James Milner and Alberto Moreno, and Jeannie Wijnaldum was upgrading on what? Emre Can, probably. At that, you know, there or thereabouts at that time. I think he gets another season out of him, but that it's much easier. It was much easier for Liverpool to buy and players because the margin for error was much wider 5 years ago than it is now. And that's not to say I don't think we should be doing that because I totally agree on the point. Mm. But I just mean on a wider point, I think it's become a central argument of like, look at all this great value we used to get. We still do get some decent bits of value. I mean, we've currently got a lad who we bought for £500,000 playing as our DM. You know, that never gets factored in when we talk about Liverpool doing some smart business. Harvey Elliott, I know people go up and down on him, but less than £10 million we paid for him in this period as well. We do it. We could just. I think we're all in agreement. We need a bit of. We do need some smarter business in that middle tier of like 10 to sort of £30 million footballers. Definitely. But we are
ultimately
where we are.
What we all want really is, I think when I rationalise Liverpool's transfer window for anybody who's watching this, right, and why haven't you mentioned FSG, I rationalise it within the confines of what Jürgen can do with the football club. Mm-hmm. That's how I rationalise it. So all this, you might be screaming at your laptop, we just need to spend more money. Yeah, that's great. We do. And I agree with that. I'd love owners that spend a lot more fucking money. And hopefully we do get owners that run the club the right way and spend loads more fucking money. That's the best case scenario for me as a football fan of this great club. But we're not there yet. And I'm rationalising decisions that were made in the summer based on what was available to us. So I can't see how anyone comes in for an injured Naby Keita and an injured Oxlade-Chamberlain and gives us the money to spend 40, 50 million quid. But if we had Tchouaméni money, I cannot understand why we didn't spend it for this season. Exactly. Yeah. I can't understand why we didn't spend
it. Is it because we went and spent it on Darwin Núñez? Is that correct?
Maybe. I mean, there's talk that that's not... I've heard it said that that's not the case. No. But we clearly paid over the odds for him. Because, and I think Real Madrid did the same with Tchouaméni. That's what they Mbappe was coming, he was coming, and then he's not, and they're like, fuck, well, we need to go and buy someone. And they went and blew Liverpool out the water for Tchouaméni to make sure, because you've got to go and get one of your other top targets. And so we did that. You know, we couldn't get Tchouaméni, so we did the reverse. We went and got the forwards. Couldn't get Erling Haaland, so you're going to go get the next best. So we've ended up paying. I think everyone would be a lot calmer with Darwin if we'd actually paid his market value, which was probably closer to 50 than it was to 80, if we're being honest about it, and maybe even less than that, to be perfectly frank. But we had to push the button and pay above and beyond. Nobody sits there and goes, no one ever factors that in. That he was never worth that amount of money. It was, but he was worth that to us because we needed to go and get it done.
If someone, and again goes back to the point earlier, the grey area, if someone could tell me right now, today, that the reason we didn't sign the midfielder is because we know, Champions League football or not, Jude Bellingham is coming in the summer, I can totally understand why they've saved money on Gakpo now rather than later. Mm-hmm. Because the money ain't going to be any more or less expensive than what the Bellingham is. You're not going to, and you know that you could spend £30 million on a player. But we spent that £30 million instead of on the midfielder. We've spent it on a guy we think might be 80 to £90 million in a year's time when he's banged 40 goals in for PSV or whatever it is. So I can rationalise that, but this is the problem. It's all if buts and maybes and guesswork. If we sign Bellingham in the summer, I'll forget this transfer window ever happened and I'll be made up.
The only problem with it is that if we're outside of Europe, we need two or three, outside of Europe, that will sting because it will forever have that. And we had this with the COVID seasons, like we managed to finish fourth with no centre halves, but if we just bought a centre half in the summer, would that have stopped that? Would we have title champions? We were the champions. You know, could we have sustained? We were top of the league at Christmas that season. Okay, it was skewed because the season started later. But you know, it's like if we sold Coutinho, if we'd actually replaced Coutinho in that January, would we have had the one extra player when we got to the Champions League final when Mo Salah gets injured instead of bringing Lallana on in the front three? But again. And again, it caused that. It's frustrating. And maybe I get that's why people spill over and people are absolutely frothing at the mouth over the ownership. And maybe that, maybe, you know, we talk ourselves into it the more we talk about it. But that's it for me. Like you, it's just the reality of where we're at. You can kind of get really angry about it, or you can kind of, you can rationalise it for what it is, I guess. But you're right. Look, hopefully there's, you've got to trust that there's a plan in place because the
hopefully it's
is...
Núñez and hopefully it's Bellingham and, and next season we win the league because we've not got Champions League football and all will be forgiven for me.
Excuse me, I'd like to win the Champions League and have Champions League football next year.
I want to win it this season as well. I just don't think we're good enough.
So a couple of comments. Asim Mahmood says, is that yellow piece on your tactics board, our new midfielder? it is not. Sadly. But at this point, anything
it's the problem position. It's the problem position.
Great comment from Tom Senior V1 saying, sell Salah, buy Chiesa. Are you all high? Lots of love for Chiesa in the comments. Who can... this another thing that makes me laugh. Get Chiesa. He's literally just been out for 12 ACL. Months with a cruciate knee injury. He's come back. He's barely scored a goal since he's returned to us. He's clearly a talent, but if he didn't get rid of Mo Salah, who is like, I mean,
don't say it, Paul.
He's an incredible physical specimen.
Thank you. Okay. Just in case, though,
Buy more Mo Salahs is what we want to be doing. Right, very brief break from us. We'll be talking a little bit ahead to Wolves in the few moments we have left on this podcast when we return.
My Liverpool Debut, a new series, exploring where it all began for a number of Anfield favourites.
We had that belief and nothing was going to get in our way, nothing was going to stop us. I was just fortunate to get my chance.
I'm about to wear the red strip for the first time and play with all the wonderful talent that I was in awe of.
And the travelling Liverpool fans started singing my name. You can imagine how special that felt.
Football saved my life.
It was amazing to be part of that lineup with that calibre of players.
I knew I deserved to be there. I knew I deserved that chance. I knew I was ready.
I'm Jamie Carragher.
I'm Phil Thompson.
I'm Martin Kelly.
I'm Jim Beglin.
I'm Neil Mellor.
My name is Bruce David Garobola.
And this is my Liverpool debut.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
Big shout out to Elle in the comments who says FSF out. Probably type that one again, mate. You'll be fine.
The Football Supporters Federation.
No, yeah. How rude. They do a lot of good things. That's not good stuff. Right. Yeah. Cool. Wolves again. We've got a great record against Wolves, Dan. So let's hope that kind of continues.
Is everyone looking at Liverpool's fixtures and what would be guaranteed 3 points is a real struggle now when you're doing it the maths in your head?
Not half, yeah, especially when it's Wolves and Brighton back to back for the last 2.5 months. why are we just playing them? Like Wolves and Seagulls, that's all we seem to face at the minute. Not easy. I went to that game at Molineux a couple of weeks ago, and that was our best performance for quite a long time, actually, in the away end was boss. But yeah, we've just got a performance, a result needs to be a catalyst for what is to come for the rest of the season.
I will live and die on that hill, and hopefully it's this weekend. What we do team-wise, we're not quite sure. But yeah, a challenge. They've bought a lot of players, so it'll be interesting to see how they go about it. A lot of teams bought a lot of players in this transfer window, would you believe?
So much of them told us that we were allowed to do that. It's this window in January, lads, that you can sign players in, and it's not just the first day.
Someone should have sold the whole of Merseyside, I think. I'm not sure the Blues do either, to be honest. But yeah, they've bought a lot of players. They're on a bit of an upward trajectory, aren't they, since Lopetegui went in? So not an easy game. We could do with an easy game at some point, really.
Yeah, there's no easy games in the Premier League. Anyone else got the cliches to throw out?
Sam Allardyce.
Look, it's almost the opponent's kind of almost irrelevant at this point, Chloe. Again, we talk about it up forever. Our margin for error has gone now. The FA Cup, any chance we have of experimentation is gone, unless we've decided that the Premier League's a big laugh. But we can't decide that until we play Real Madrid. Because, look, we remain the side that beat Man City earlier on in the season in the Premier League. You know, we've had some good games, and we're at this time when we've turned it on brilliantly. And now it feels like forever, doesn't it? Yeah. Big Bournemouth 9-0.
Are we still just, is our goal difference still +9, or have we lost that one thing now as well?
Stop looking at the league. This is the thing. We've now got that run until the Real Madrid game to make sure that we're the best we can possibly be, and Liverpool just need to win some fucking football matches. We're not going to lose every game. It feels like we will do. We've got to take the positives that we've had in recent week. The Brighton thing, we've got it. Look, it wasn't a great performance, and it was a very, very disappointing defeat. But Liverpool have got to look, and what I'm sure they're looking at the training ground is the incremental improvements from the Brighton League game, and saying, well, the team has been, systemically Liverpool have performed better in the last couple of weeks. What they need to do now is stick the ball in the back of the net a few times and actually take the pressure off the lads at the other end of the pitch. Wolves represents a good opportunity. I'd rather have Wolves than any of the other games that follow in the coming weeks. I wouldn't really want Everton right now. I know it's pretty soon regardless. I wouldn't want Newcastle right now. Playing a team that at least we've got a feel for should work in our favour to some extent.
Yeah, oh, Chloe. I mean,
oh, Chloe.
Jesus. Look, at the end of the day, whatever happens, the Reds need to you can't say turn it around, because what are we turning it around for? We might already be out of top four, sadly. But you need to keep the hope alive. You need to keep the desire alive and the commitment from the players week in, week out. So you've got to, I think Jürgen's got it in his mind, tell his players, look, top four, we did it last year. We were so far behind the league leaders, and look what happened. You can do it. And hope that, once again, I've not seen a reaction at any point from any of our Liverpool team. After each individual defeat or disappointing result, you've always thought, it's all right, we'll come back. I want to see something from them. I want to see a reaction, and I've not got that. I'd love to see it again, but I can't tell you if I will see an actual reaction. But I think we just got to go for it. You've got to turn around and say, there's that around the Real Madrid games, it is horrible. Those fixtures are horrible. And to be honest, I don't even know who Liverpool play in the next six games. Why? Because I've had enough. I don't look at the teams and go, expect a win, expect a draw. Oh, that might be. Because every single game is graft. And we need to learn how to win when we need to graft and make it dirty and get through the games. So yeah, it's one of them where I'm really hoping that we're, for some reason, got some positivity, and we're like, not like me, and we're like, let's go for it, let's see where we are, let's get a good couple of runs together if we can. It's a massive ask. But Jürgen knows those players, and then if we've got a couple of good runs together for that Real Madrid game, imagine the atmosphere. That's what we've got to strive for.
Yeah, you can't go into Real Madrid expecting, because it's Real Madrid and it's the European Cup and magic and blah, 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 blah,
exactly.
Blah. There's got to be something that says it feels like it's a little bit in our, skill set to actually win games by the time we come to that point.
It does. Watching Liverpool at the moment, like having an old iPhone, you charge, it's on 100%. You turn around after 10 minutes, you look down, it's on 16%. So what the fucking hell's going on, lads? You know what I mean? That's how Liverpool is. We're just so depleted in terms of our energy levels and stuff at the moment. But you made the point a couple of weeks ago, I think, Paul, and I agree with it, mate. You've got to make yourself hard to beat right now. The form that we're in, we're not going to blow teams away, and we've got to just almost forget about that and work out how Liverpool are going to score goals. You know, find that, atypical this season's Liverpool goal. You know, that is being hard to beat and getting something from a set piece and stuff, then you can carry that into a Real Madrid game and you can maybe nick something. But you've got to keep the back door shut first and foremost. We can't be conceding early goals anymore. We can't be switching off early doors in games. We've got to earn the right to play football in each and every game that we play right now, and that's what I'll be hoping for against Wolves.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing more Gakpo, to be honest, Dan. Again, he's another one who's drawn a bit of score, and I've mentioned this elsewhere, but a lot of it's because there's lots of shit-eating, grin-faced Man United fans who are enjoying their football club at the moment, and kind of like, therefore, they can be a bit like, ha ha ha, we didn't buy him, he's not being great. There was a great video clip, and I've been waiting for it to happen, the all Gakpo touches thing that was doing the rounds on Twitter, and it takes, you know, it shows you that he's gaining a greater understanding of what we're asking. It is a bit weird at the moment with the Darwin Nunez kind of situation, where our understanding is we've bought him as a centre forward. But when I watch the best of Gakpo at the weekend, it makes more sense for what we're trying to do. All of a sudden, the way he knits things together, when he was dropping deep and picking the ball up, he was Bobby Firmino with pace. So that's one thing I'm hoping. I want to see him incrementally building on that. And if he could actually, you know, get a situation where Salah could score a goal again, that might make us all feel loads better about the whole attack.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think Salah getting back to focus. We've been making a lot about Salah not being in goal-scoring opportunities, those goal-scoring moments. We haven't been getting into those positions. We did against Brighton. He just wasn't able to finish them off. I know he provided the assist, but outside of that, it was a pretty porous game from him, given the amount of times we got him one-on-one with his fullback, and he never really managed to make it count.
Or the keeper,
that matter, yeah. But with Gakpo, I completely agree. He's been getting better and better, sort of every time we've seen him in a cameo. He's okay at Wolves. I felt like he was really good against Brighton. I felt like he didn't actually get the praise he deserved. I know we lose the game, and that's probably why. And he doesn't get anything tangible.
He could have had two assists if the other people had finished the shots.
Well, that's it. He didn't get anything tangible from the game. He probably needs a very impressive assist, or, of course, stick one in the back of the net himself, ideally. And then he's off and running. And you always want that from a new set. I remember Crouch, how long it took him to get off the mark. And you just want that first one to go in. I think he needs it. I've been really impressed with him. And like you, Paul, I think all the characteristics were there in that performance of Bobby Firmino, which is so strange because I've referenced it a million times, talk about Gakpo, but when I spoke to a lot of people who understand him really well, nobody at any point said, oh, he could do a false nine for you. It was a 10 or left wing, and that's how it felt. But we've seen Nunes sign him as a centre forward, better on the left. We've seen Gakpo sign as a left winger, better at being Bobby Firmino Mark II. So that could just be the way it happens.
It's funny, isn't it, how we do this? Like, everyone's become a bit like myopic and stuff. It's like, we bought it. He was this when we bought him. Why? That's where he's bought. He must have been bought for that position. Like, how often do we buy footballers and play them in completely different positions when they come to the fucking... Gio and Allen being the almost king example of all this. Like, you know, again, Roberto Firmino was a 10, gets made into a false nine, revolutionises how we play. Brendan Rodgers playing in fucking right wing. You know, we've had Adam Lallana is a lad who played in the front three. Jürgen Klopp's like, nah, you're a pressing central midfielder. And we were all, you remember doing the, which players will be Jürgen Klopp players? I remember you going, Lallana will be, and everyone was good time, was going, oh, not a chance, Lallana could never be a Jürgen Klopp. Ends up like the archetypal Jürgen Klopp player. And that's why it's kind of interesting to see. It feels like what we're doing right now, and again, this is when you've got stability in the managerial seat, is that it is a bit weird at the moment because there might be a shorter term gain to throw in Salah centre forward or to throw in Darwin Nunes. He's been injured, so it's hard to tell. But it feels like we're starting to get the shape of... They clearly like the look of Gakpo in that number nine, Chris. And so they're seeing the benefits of going, well, we've got him now. We're just going to play him where we feel we're going to use him. And hopefully the long-term benefits will be felt from that if we're not feeling them today.
I think that's right. I think, you know, when we signed Gakpo, I did say on one of the deep dive shows, I do feel like he's got the attributes to play that false nine. But what Darwin Nunes did before the winter break was prove that he can play the left wing and be an absolute handful. And I don't think we've really got Darwin Nunes. We don't play to his strengths in terms of when he's a centre forward at the moment. So if we can get quite good sorts of efficiencies out of Darwin Nunes and out of Gakpo at the same time, while maybe trying to bring Mo Salah into the game, because he's the one I think who struggled most with having Nunes as the number nine, is that he's not getting into those positions. Well, I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? You know, we can spread the shops between Darwin
Nunes.
Who
runs into that space first?
Yeah, it's a race. And right now, Darwin Nunes is winning it, unfortunately, because he's not finishing all the opportunities that we create. But it's about getting the best out of the front three. And when there are injuries and stuff, and people come back, it might change again. It might go to Darwin Núñez, and it might be that actually Darwin Núñez does 60 and Gakpo does the last 30 or the other way around, and it just gives us options in different ways to beat teams. I think the versatility is what Klopp's always wanted from his forward players, and that is the one thing that we have bought.
And he was blessed with Mane and Firmino and Salah at their pomp because they were just so good.
They had versatility, but they were all world-class in each of the three positions, which is mental.
Just wanted to ask you, Chris, I know you might want to go into yourself, but on that, because we've obviously added Darwin Núñez, who's a very different nine to Bobby Firmino is, his entire game is modelled about going that way and not necessarily coming this way. Does it make it harder for Firmino being around and in the squad still getting dropped in and out? Because when Firmino's there, we play very differently because of what he does. When Darwin Núñez is suddenly in the nine, we want to do it completely.
Changes everything.
We're going through a transition, we know that, but it's made even harder by having Firmino and Núñez as your nine option, surely.
Probably. I mean, it changes the midfield. It changes where you're supposed to attack from and where the space is. I think what we saw a few weeks ago was Fabinho getting into the sort of half space at times during games. You've got the eight getting into the half space. They'd never do that with Bobby Firmino. They'd never need to do that because he's there. But the space is there and you need to get somebody into that space because Núñez is further forward. When you drop Bobby in, the midfield changes around it, and that's, I think, the difficulty.
If you want to know what the archetypal Liverpool goal is going to look like, and we're starting to see the shoots of this, it is what we saw at the weekend of the chances that we created. It's when Gakpo's dropping in, dropping deep and coming with it, and then look at the runs that Salah and Elliot are making. They're bending runs centrally. Darwin Núñez will do that round the outside, but they're ending up in the 18-yard box. In fact, it's where Fabio Carvalho gets his goal against City because he drifts over from that side to fill in that position. That's what it's going to start to look like, and we've created those chances, but you're right, you just need to start scoring them. And if the lads in front of goal can start sticking them away, it will make us feel a whole lot better about a whole lot more things, because ultimately, I just don't think we're quite there to be winning games 1-0 at this point. It'll be eased if we can just get Jota back, if we can just get Bobby Firmino back, because again, he's in brilliant goal scoring form. That will ease the pressure on absolutely everything. But yeah, it's hard to judge where we're at until we get that. Fingers crossed we can just get up and running against Wolves, and then we'll all feel a little bit better in the short term. Right, a couple of things I want to draw people's attention to. First and foremost, in the Discord, the club legends, Jalea family says, well, let's hope our brilliant squad all get match fit and return to form. We need 70 points. That would probably be enough for fourth place, depending on other results. So another 41 out of 19 games to play. 41 out of a possible 57. Hope in our hearts. I love a little bit of positivity. Yeah, go ahead. It's terrifying when you actually put it in those kind of terms. Other thing as well, we've got a whole bunch of brand new shows launching this week into next week as well. Red Men Rebooted is coming from next Monday. But if you want to get a little glimpse at some of the new things we're doing, immediately after this, we've got a brand new show. It is the Biased Football Podcast. It is going to be the Red Men Originals chatting through and basically having a bit of a laugh at some of our rivals, talking through some of their issues and whatever, and just being horrendously biased Liverpool fans whilst talking about the issues of other football clubs. What's not to like. There is going to be focus on the Ev, of course. We will be talking about Todd Bowley's loophole.
I'm quite disappointed.
And loads more. If you want to head over there onto redmenplus.com, sign up. You can get that in video and podcast form as well. And do tune in Thursday, 7 p.m. live on YouTube, a brand new show, Thursday Night Pint. It is an expanded version of what we do on the podcast. We're going to be using the full room set. We've got Adam Rowe and we've got James Sutton in the studio for that. We're going to be doing a bit more of an edgy, laid-back, fun look at all things around Liverpool and football. So yeah, tune in Thursday night at 7 p.m. exclusively on YouTube. I hope to see you over there. Guys, thank you so much. I feel a little bit better now that we've come around. How are you doing, Chloe?
No.
Fuming.
see us on the Biased Footy Podcast. Other than that, have a boss day.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more boss content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.